Herzlich willkommen zu Saatkorn, deinem Podcast mit Inspiration für eine bessere Arbeitswelt. Hello everybody, this is Gero Hesse from the Saatkorn Podcast. Again, I'm talking to somebody with an international background, so this episode will be in English. And I'm super happy to have a very interesting woman here on the show. She will talk a little bit about her background. Actually, now she's in London. I know that she also has some ties to Finland. So that's also very interesting. And her name is Rina Hellström, and she's the founder of the Agile HR community. Rina, I'm super happy to have you here on the Saatkorn show. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm very honored to be here. I'm happy that I met you and we can talk about the stuff that is really close to my heart today.
Absolutely. We've met at the Unleash conference in Paris last October, and we had a small discussion, and you had these nice little sweets you offered to me, and then we had a discussion, so that was very nice. And I felt like, okay, why don't we talk on the podcast? Because the whole topic of agility in these times is, I guess, more important than ever. So we'll come to that. But before, how did you end up with being a founder of an agile HR community?
Well, it's a long story, of course, but I already studied what might be the precursors of agility 20 something years ago. It was called, Peter Senge's The Fifth Element, Learning Organizations. And that blew me away in the university. I thought this is what I want to work with. And I started working in large organizations in HR, and of course was pretty, unfortunately, disappointed, because it was very far from learning organizations. It was process orientation. It was, one process globally, and we were just looking at quite kind of old-fashioned ways of looking. The human view wasn't really there. Very old-fashioned human view. Management theories, old-fashioned. So I was known already then as a rebel, as a challenger. I had very good leaders and coaches, and they always got me involved in corporate initiatives where we needed to facilitate new things, modernize things, improve, develop. So that was my background. And then I'm an engineer, and some of my friends are in the software, and they were working in an agile way. And when I started learning about how they were working, I found my home. I literally read the Scrum Guide, and I said to my husband, I'm going to stop working. I'm going to quit my job and start a company, and I'm going to start bringing agility into what was my area of knowledge: management, non-software, and HR. And my husband said, you're crazy. And I said, you know who you married. And I started a company. And ever since that, I've been working with agility in the non-software space.
That sounds really interesting. And if we take a look at now at the agile HR community, is it really only in brackets a community, or is it a company? What are you doing there exactly?
Oh, wonderful. So I'm challenging even what a consultancy needs to be. So I don't appreciate very much the consultancies as they have been for the last 30, 40 years, where you build a pyramid, you've got the partners, you've got a number of younger consultants running around, and it's built on quite a lot of off-the-shelf models in their libraries. So I challenge myself, how would I like to see a consultancy built? So my company is a consultancy, but all the consultants that do work for us, either they train or they facilitate or they consult, they're also people like you and I. So they have real jobs on the side, real jobs as in leaders in organizations or agile coaches. So they do this work through the community to other clients. That's why it's called Agile HR Community. We work with agility in the non-software space, mostly in HR, people operations, management, development, etc. So that's what we do.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I was wondering, when I took a look at the website, which I will also, of course, have the link in the show notes, Is it really a steady organization that you have? And probably it's not. Probably it's more fluid, but there is a team. So do they work full-time for the Agile HR community or part-time? How is that really?
They work when there is a need to. So we've got global reach. What's really amazing is our small company is one of the leaders in this niche of Agile HR. So whenever you Google Agile HR or look into agility in HR, we have built a scalable model so we can train hundreds of people in a short amount of time. We're working with companies like Netflix. We're working with BT, British Telecom. We're working with ANZ, a bank in Australia. We're working with these large multinationals that find us to help them with scaling agility across their HR teams. And quite many people are confused, like, you're not a big company. No, we're not. We're like 10, 12 people, but we can scale very quickly. And the other part where I challenge how consultancies work is our incentive isn't selling as much as possible. Our incentive is to get our clients to change how they do HR work for real. And that's why we don't even need to grow massively, because we can scale, we can teach them, and off they go. You're on your own. Call us if you need help with the next stages, right? Whereas many consultancies have their incentives as in, we need to sell as much hours as possible, and we need to make customers pretty, even dependent on consultants. So you see these situations where consultants leave and nobody actually owns the change. They haven't really sustained it. And that's not what we do. I've literally challenged myself and my clients like that quite a lot, or our clients like that, is that our logic is we want to take our hands off as soon as possible so you can walk on your own. That comes also from sports. I'm a sportswoman. I've been playing handball for 19 years. And the coaching that I work with is we need to build teams that can deal with situations by themselves on the field.
And if that works out, obviously, I assume you get a pretty good portion of a very positive word of mouth then.
About 75% of our clients come through recognition and referrals. Yeah. So I'm really... I can't believe where I am with this company. I can't believe that when I said to my husband, I'm going to quit my job and start an own company in Finland, that I work with Netflix, or that I am one of the lead coaches for 800 people's transformation in the HR of British Telecom. You know, it's just fantastic. I'm very grateful and thankful, and also an unfinished thing to say, but very proud of it.
Yeah, but I believe that. So it's a journey for about around 8 years, if LinkedIn is correct in this case. But I think you had a company before that morphed kind of into Agile HR community. So it's a longer time then, right?
Yes, there is a kind of a stealth mode people geeks company that we worked with previously. It was a lot of people analytics, etc. But that was too early and it morphed into Agile then. I still have people geeks right now under an umbrella. We're going to look into AI stuff under people geeks brand.
Could really make sense. It's funny because lately I really took a look at the different HR segments and how many startups, how many companies are in these segments. Obviously, it's quite difficult because I don't know any comprehensive analysis of this. But clearly, the whole AI topic is really crazy right now. Everybody does it, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody talks about it. I'm not quite sure how many people actually do it well. There is an exponential growth in that area. I'm really curious about the ethics around that. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious about the systemic and governance and structural implications for organizations, workforce management, workforce planning, what that means when you need to start looking at which are the jobs that you will continue with, when you call about the footprint, where you set up offices, where you're increasing people, decreasing people, or botting your jobs. Really intriguing conversations.
Yeah, and that leads back to the need of organizations on consultancies like you. And I suppose the demand is pretty high because we are in such uncertain times, at least my feeling is, and I'm in the business now for like 26 years or something, the level of uncertainty was never higher. And that has a lot of implications, obviously, also for HR. How do you deal with the people? How is the employee experience? How do you ensure that people really feel there's some kind of purpose in what they do? That's again related to the retention of your workforce. So everything links into the next thing. So I assume that you have a lot of projects going on, and what I'm interested in is to get a feeling, what kind of projects do you have there lately, or is it really a broad variety of everything?
So the main part of our work is upskilling folks in thinking themselves. What we want to do is teach them to think this way and teach them to contextualize agility. So let me first take a few steps back. Why agile? Why is agile important? Agile is the how you work in the uncertain environment. Agile brings you practices, values, tools, principles, and methods. And actually, the certainty comes from them. We will always be in an uncertain world from now on, but if you know the tools and the practices of how you actually deliver value in this uncertain world, the tools bring you and methods and values bring you that certainty. You know that you can deal with uncertainty, you know that you can get feedback and build it iteratively and incrementally, and you know that you can tweak and improve as you go. So what kind of projects we do? Upskill folks. And both HR managers, leaders, in what this means for them, because it's a big shift in the mindset. It's a big shift in the mindset first to start understanding what this means. Thereafter, we often help with transformation. So thinking about where you are as an organization or a team and what might be the steps forward for you. We never create blueprints. So we're not the blueprinting organization to say, here's where you are, this is your blueprint, and here's a roadmap for 2 years going there. That's not us. So the customers that find us want to have a partner, a brain power to really contextualize the change and do an inclusive change where we actually involve their people to lead the change. That's why we can be quite a small consultancy, is because we're not bringing that army in. We're bringing a few very senior people who've done that themselves in their own organizations. We have the battle scars. We have done the mistakes during our years. We've always also had our, if you think about great consultants, you understand the traditional organization as well. You're not just in that agile, very fast-moving space, but you know what you're dealing with because you've been there before. You've lived through that reality. So we help with transformations. We sometimes work with projects such as we need to improve the employee experience, or we need to redesign how we do onboarding, or I've been helping a few larger and smaller companies redesign their performance management structure to be modern. So with these, what we call people products or people services or processes, sometimes it's that we help with. And then sometimes it's just executive coaching, kind of creating strategies, helping facilitate global strategies in HR, looking into the strategy part, how we bring in the how we work, what operating model they should work with. So if you look at the HR strategy and you combine that with the business strategy of an organization, quite often you find that the current organization in HR is not the most value-adding organization. So you need to start looking at the operating model. What kind of teams do we set up? We don't want those silos any longer. So you're a business person. If you're looking at this from a manager point of view, you don't care if somebody's sitting in performance or reward or L&D or whatever they are called, the HR silos, as long as it works for you, because you're just dealing with your team. So we're looking at the operating model and the teaming in HR as well. What else? Yeah, we do speaking, engaging, facilitating, all of those things on the side, but those are the kind of main themes that we work with. How does that sound to you?
Super interesting, actually, and pretty diverse at the same time. So you mentioned two things that I find particularly interesting. The first is the shift of mindset, also with leadership people. What is the big challenge here? Is the big challenge that they usually feel they have seen everything and they know how to do things, and or because you said that's really a challenge to shift a mindset in the organization?
There are a few mindset shifts that I've been talking about. Let me share a few ones that I might connect to, specifically the German listeners as well. Quite many of our organizations are built on an idea of certainty first. We need to have a plan, a perfect plan. We need to know what we're building. The outcome needs to be clear. We need to know who is building that. We need to know the budget. We need to know the specifications. So we believe that we know up front what we need. And we connect our plans, commit our people, commit our budget to that actually quite uncertain idea of something, right? Then we start working with that. Now, the mindset shifts that need to happen here is, first of all, the world is changing around us as we build. And this was happening in software 30 years ago. They couldn't take a plan and just go with the plan for a year because so much was changing around them. So the environment is moving faster than our plan is one thing that we need to accept, right? If you're a leader and you create that 3-year strategy and you've broken that down into all of those actions can be already old in half a year or 3 months.
Absolutely, yes.
Right. So this is, the environment is pressuring us to build and deliver value in new ways. So that's one thing. And you need to accept that. You can't have all the answers up front. Now, the other mindset shift is involve people, involve your customers, start bringing them in to co-create with you, understand their value flows, connect to that, to really, really put the customer in the center. In for businesses, you have to understand who your customers are and how they are creating value in their own organizations. For HR, we have to really understand the personas in our organization. We usually, in a kind of traditional HR setting, we say we look at things from an employee and manager perspective. But that's too narrow. We might have a very senior employee who's done this work for a long time, or a person who comes into their first job. They need very different things from us, right? So we need to start looking at these user needs from a much more broader sense. And this is one thing with the mindset as well. We can bring in these customer-centric tools and really start understanding the users. This requires us to put a leash on our own professional egos, right? Because if you come in as a manager, leader, or HR leader and say, I know what my people need, I know what the customer needs, and here's the solution, you're practically working with you're limiting the value to what you can think about. And that's quite narrow as well. So one of the mindset shifts is, let's start using these tools to find what the right answer is. Prototype, experiment, validate. For businesses, I'm not sure if many of the businesses that you work with have found that you can do A/B testing, which means that you create several different parts and see in real time which works best. You close down the parts which don't and continue with the few that do. So you kind of have all of these tools and practices to help you navigate the change and still do smart things. Another thing that I find, especially with the organization's HR folks, quality folks, compliance in banks, compliance folks, risk, or finance, finance, is the perfectionist. There is a perfectionist and there is a risk-averse profile that is overrepresented in these groups. And it seems like when we work with them, we can help them shift their mindset to trust that they can start something before they have 100% agreement and plans on everything, because that 100% plan isn't going to be stable anyway. So You know, so
it's
these
the
are
same story as before. Once the plan is 100%, reality is already three steps down the road, right?
Correct, exactly. So why don't we just accept that change is happening and we learn the modern tools of how to work within constant change? The change will not be stopping. It will just increase. So you can't go back to a world where you didn't have change, where you could stay on top of your work tasks, because you're going to be overwhelmed with work tasks all the time. That's, by the way, a fourth mindset, prioritization. And that is something that I find myself being quite strong at, is to help people start understanding what are the elements of building a good prioritization governance system, because we can't start all 100 things at one time in organizations. We're not getting anywhere. We're not getting any value out from that. So to start understanding, it's harsh, it's difficult, we need to prioritize. We're not going to give everything to everyone. Some customers will need to wait and we just take that risk. So this is the effort value discussion that you need to start having. And that's the only way to actually get something done, is to prioritize nowadays.
Yeah, I would totally agree. You mentioned a few minutes back also another word that to me is very relevant. It's upskilling. And there's different perspectives on that. Obviously, in Germany or in most European countries, you have the severe demographic change going on. And we know that we will lose large amounts of our workforce due to this change. And on the same side, in the same moment, we have such a fast development of new technologies. For instance, the whole AI discussion that we already mentioned, that you know there's less people, there's less knowledge, less old knowledge in the corporations, and you always have to learn new things, and you have to be open to learn constantly, all the time, every day. And that might also be one of those mindset shifts. Or is it already clear to everybody?
Well, I think that you are a great example of a CEO who is running a podcast as a hobby, and you're learning through that. You found your own way of learning from deep professionals like I am or somebody else. And that is amazing. I think that everyone needs to start, if you're working in any job, your job is going to be disrupted by AI. Any job. It's going to be, we're going to hand over mundane coordination tasks, admin tasks, things like this to an AI sooner or later. I would say within 3 years, most organizations will need to start automating things. That means that if you are now just a human person doing moving things from one system to another, or adding, analyzing stuff on an Excel sheet, your job is going to not be safe any longer. And you just have to face that. I personally don't think it's the corporations and organizations 100% responsibility to start upskilling everyone. I think
it's everybody's.
It's everybody's.
It's about your own employability.
Exactly. You need to be market relevant in your own field. And that is definitely going to be the biggest shift we are going to see. I think as well is that if you're looking at the fast development, losing demographic, I think where we're going to see the biggest problems are craft jobs. Craft jobs with electricians, plumbers, builders, people who can actually set up all the Wi-Fi, internet connections, you know, all these electrical gadgets in the office and fix them. We're going to see people that we're losing tens of years of on the knowledge in that. So how do we make sure we've got crafts persons that take care of all of these things? And for a deep professional like I am, I really have to jump on the wagon. So I've gone back to hands-on testing, trying AI tools. I'm literally going in and utilizing a few hours a week to do build agents and see how they work. I'm going back to learning from scratch. And that helps me as a leader then think about, okay, what does this mean on a more strategic level? Because I now know I just worked for 3 hours on an agent and it literally saved my assistant maybe 4 days of work. Every month, 4 days of work. So just 3 hours of work building an agent, doing what my assistant has done before, already saved me a lot of time and her as well. And when I do this myself and realize how easy it is, it's literally you're don't have to code. You're telling an AI what you want to do. It's building it for right in front of you. You can test it and say, that's wrong. I want this to be done. You can ask the agent to say, hey, you're using quite a lot of tokens right now. How might you build this so that you're using less tokens every time you do something? And it brings me three different ideas and even says, I recommend we do this third option. I just go like, yeah, let's do the third option. I have no idea what these options are, but do the best that you found. And just building it through talking with an AI, I don't have to code, I don't have to know anything, and it's building me something that works. It's magic almost.
Yeah, but in a position like you have, or even my position, where I can really decide where I invest time. Yeah? So I'm the CEO, so yeah. I have a large amount of freedom there, and I suppose you have as well, aside from customers, obviously. Yeah, that's clear. But then it's easy to say it's your own responsibility to really experiment and work with these things. For these people that have jobs like 8 hours data entry and that's their working day, of course, they also should invest the time. But I also can understand when they say, sorry, but I have this 8 hour a day and this is my job and I get paid obviously less money, which is fine because yeah. I decided it this way. Then you know, it becomes a little bit complicated.
You know what metaphor comes to my mind?
Yeah.
With this kind of an mindset is, think about when the internet came and you would be a person dealing with the faxes. I'm just faxing 8 hours a day. This is my job. It's delivering value. I'm faxing and that's what I do. And the corporation is not, if the corporation isn't upskilling you, you're just going to do the faxing until your job is gone. So this is the question. If you are a controller in an organization, you're doing financial controlling 8 hours a day, very busy days. How can you find somewhere, half an hour a week to just start kind of trying things out? It is so affordable now. It's literally, 50 euros a month to have both, I'm not going to share which technologies I use, but a technology that can code for you, an agent application where you can try agents. You don't even have to build something that works. Just start trying so you're not at least just the faxer in 3 years, if that makes sense.
I asked, or I made this point again, because it leads us, I made it intentionally, because it leads us back to the mindset topic. You, of course, you can argue like that, but of course it won't help you at the end. Yeah, and it's about you. It's not about the company in this case. So, yeah. And by the way, it's big fun, obviously, to really experiment and work with these things. At least that's how I see it.
And even if it wasn't fun, you have to choose, you have to be aware of if your job is at risk, and then you have to make decisions. Is this something that I want to learn, or would I need to go and learn some crafts job, for example? Can I become something else? But it's a nonsense mindset, in my opinion, to sit there and do the, metaphorically speaking, do the faxing and think that somebody will come and feed you a new job, a new capability, new skills, and you will be safe. That is a nonsense mindset.
That's an illusion, I would say. Yeah, yes. It won't happen. Yeah, that's clear. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the future in terms of your agile HR community. What should happen this year that you are sitting there at the end of the year, Rina, Christmas time? I don't know if Christmas means something to you. If not, let's just say it's the end of the year. And what would make you happy looking back on this year?
So one of my biggest motivators is that I've kind of quietly said this. I'm going to say it the first time here. I want to influence 1 million people to work in a new way. That's where I want to go. And we've done thousands already, and they are influencing thousands through their organizations, I think. So I'm thinking that we will influence 1 million, you know, as in my career. But to get there, I've now looked into scaling our upskilling and automating that this year. So, which means that you're not dependent on one of our coaches or trainers to start training this mindset principles, what this really means, but you can do that digitally and then add some coaching if you need to. So I want to scale that. That's one thing.
It sounds like you're building a real product.
Product approach in the business, yes. And I'm going to use AI for that as well. So I'm going to both scale the agile training, but then I'm going to tinker around. I'm quite good at translating what I learn into a learning journey. So when I'm tinkering around with AI, one of my key things is now I'm going to build AI learning for people that are quite beginners like I am. So I'm good at explaining and I'm good at curating what they should need to do. So that's one of my goals, to have an AI learning journey as well by the end of the year.
Well, that sounds really great. And perhaps we make a second episode next year to find out if that really became reality. Last question for today from my side.
Yes.
Zatcon has a claim, inspiration for a better working world. And of course, I'm interested in what inspired you lately? So this is the right wording. So what inspired you lately? Can be a book, could be an experience.
Can jump to anything else? Yeah. So I'm very inspired by quantum science, what that means, and quantum computing. I'm very inspired by challenging how the financial markets work and what money means. I've been looking into some crypto and I'm starting to understand what that means. And I think it's very intriguing to how that is challenging our notion of money and value and wealth. I'm very intrigued by AI, as you probably heard. So I'm a tech geek. I'm a HR person with an engineering background and a business leader with a tech heart. So I'm quite techie. I'm following deeply what's going on in the AI world currently, and I'm kind of, my mind is blown every week with where that is going. And then I'm really intrigued by a bit more spiritual approaches as well, to understand consciousness, our reactions, who we are, how we can lead and guide ourselves in this change. So the more human side of it, in addition to the ethics all around all of this. So big themes that I'm wondering about. And I take my quiet spaces in when I fly quite a lot in airplanes. That's where I do the thinking. So I like to think about these difficult things, which are complex.
Sounds super interesting. So let me thank you that you took 30 minutes to talk to me. It was a great pleasure, very inspiring to me. And I wish you all the best with the Agile HR community. Thank you so much.
Thank Lina. You so much for this. It was very wonderful to talk to you. And I hope that somebody gets some inspiration from this.
I guess so. So, das war diese Saatkorn-Podcast-Episode. Ich hoffe, dir hat Spaß gemacht und sie hat dir gefallen. Bevor ich jetzt hier rausgehe, noch ein kleiner Tipp für dich. Abonniere doch kostenlos meinen Saatkorn-Newsletter. Dann gibt es jeden Sonntag alle Podcasts, alle News, alle Artikel, alle Verlosungen, alles, was ich auf Saatkorn so mache, gratis in dein Mailpostfach, und du hast bequem alles an einem Ort und verpasst nichts mehr. Das Ganze kostet, wie gesagt, nichts. Den Link zum Abo gibt's in den Shownotes. Würde mich freuen, wenn wir uns da wieder treffen. Ganz lieben Dank und bis bald. Ciao.